Spoilers for all published books of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, and all televised episodes of HBO's Game of Thrones.
Atcha patch. Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the Princes That Were Promised.
Welcome to the Princes That Were Promised. It's me, it's Shawnee Wan, and with me as always is John. The Battle of the Trident, the turning point, although you could argue that the Battle of the Bells, the Battle of the Stony Sept was the turning point.
They're all turning points. Robert didn't die. They did suffer a loss at Ashford, but it wasn't devastating.
Not at all.
But any devastating loss that didn't happen is a turning point. Yeah. Because the more Robert lives, the more
power grows. Perhaps more importantly, his legend grows. Because as he wins these battles, as he survives this manhunt for him across Westeros, it's almost like he's getting a lot of what you would call street cred with the common folk. These people work with the land, or they have some sort of trade and some sort of 9-to-5er, and maybe they have a kid or two, but it's wartime, so it's dangerous for them. But it's a story, it's a narrative of Robert and all these deeds, and they're enjoying it for the most part, as long as they're safe and not in harm's way when these battles take place. Talked about it last week. The story that's being told about Robert, him fighting this war for his true love, who was kidnapped by the evil Targaryens, or whatever, however you want to frame this narrative. In the realm of public opinion, Robert has this on lockdown. At this point in time, Robert's age, Robert's build, his skill set, I can't think of anybody that can beat him. You want to bring the Mountain into the argument, the Hound, or Sir Jaime.
Well, let's not forget that Rhaegar did injure him.
You're right.
You know, maybe a half a foot extra in quicker, or maybe Rhaegar would have killed him.
The ferocity that Robert is able to tap into, that anger, Baratheon rage, it wins him a throne. We left off last week with the double wedding of Eddard Stark and Jon Arryn to the wonderful, beautiful
tandem
of the Tully women.
Double T. Tully tandem.
Ugh.
Oh my God.
Imagine having to marry a Tully.
Oh man.
Oh.
Oh, Eddard. Oh.
Good place is River Run.
This sucks.
So the rebels and the Targaryens are both taking this as an opportunity to plot out the next stage of this war. Aerys realizes that this is a...
Now he realizes. The 600 events that happened before this were big.
It's normal, everyday Targaryen operations. But
got this shit under control. Yeah. Don't worry.
So let's start with the rebels catching a breather at River Run. I'm going to have a question for you in a second. Robert, while he's at River Run before they march, Robert proclaims to the realm his intention to claim the Iron Throne. Of the three rebel leaders of Jon Arryn, Eddard Stark, Robert Baratheon, Robert has the best claim to the throne. The reason he has this claim, and I don't know how good of a claim it really is.
Not now. I can, after the king is dead and Rhaegar is dead, okay, rule of conquest, but at this point,
he's got no claim.
King, heir's heir is all there. You
gotta get through all the Targaryens, probably some Martells, and then maybe you look at Robert. If there was some horrific boating accident and all the Targaryens were on the boat, to say he has a claim to the throne based on his blood, based on his family, it's like Laura Roslin becoming president, less than that, I would think. But Robert's grandmother is Princess Rhaelle Targaryen. And she was the youngest child of Aegon the Fifth Targaryen, Aegon the Unlikely. Her mother was Queen Betha Blackwood. Rhaelle Targaryen married Lord Ormond Baratheon of Storm's End. A little bit of backstory. I don't want to get too into the backstory. Duncan Targaryen, who was the oldest of Aegon the Unlikely's children and named after Duncan the Tall, was betrothed to the daughter of Lord Lionel Baratheon. But Duncan broke his betrothal, and he married Jenny of Oldstones, who plays into the prince that was promised prophecy. Mm-hmm. Not getting into that, but Duncan marries Jenny Boldstone. You think about how Walder Frey reacted to that betrothal being broken off. And then you add a Baratheon temper to the mix. Lionel Baratheon is pissed, to say the least. And he rebels against the king. A trial by combat ends his rebellion. I don't want to get too much into what the rebellion was. It wasn't really anything but a Baratheon overreaction. But to make the peace, there's a new betrothal, and that's Rael to Lord Lionel's son and heir, Ormund Baratheon. To seal the bargain, Rael is sent to Storm's End. She serves as cupbearer and companion to Lord Lionel's wife. Rael and Ormund are wed in 245 AC. Their son, Stefan, was born the next year. Stefan's sons were Robert, Stannis, and Renly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Robert's claim to the throne. It's better than any claim that Eddard or Jon Arryn could come up with. But if you think about it, the way this rebellion is going and the notoriety and the fame that Robert is achieving with these victories, Jon Arryn's an old man. And Eddard Stark is the Warden of the North and has no desire to be the king. Of the three, mm-hmm. Robert should be king. Now these guys are thinking it's no longer about saving Lyanna. That's not the focus anymore. Now it's about a full-on rebellion and the Sauron ambitions, whatever ideas Rickard Stark had, it wasn't this. I think it was more along the lines of working with Rhaegar Targaryen, with him as king. But now it's full-on get rid of the fucking Targaryens altogether. And Robert is spearheading this. And with their victory at the Battle of the Bells, they're thinking of what happens when we win. Somebody's got to be king.
Well, damn it, might as well be me. I've lost so much, damn it.
Hold on, let me finish fucking this whore. And I'll tell you how much I lost. Maesters later on use his blood ties as the reason for him becoming king. And that's because history's written by the survivors. Actually, he wins the Iron Throne by conquest, which is the same as being a usurper. Here's my question. Robert making claim to the Iron Throne and thinking about the end of this war, winning it, and what happens next. Do you think that's Robert? Or do you think that's maybe Jon Arryn, Hossa Tully talking to Robert and telling him, we need to win this, but we also need a fairly smooth plan for who takes the Iron Throne. And we think it should be you. Or do you think it's Robert saying, I'm going to be the fucking king?
I can see it both ways.
Yeah.
I can see them saying we need, like, I can definitely see them saying, listen, we need a plan, not a succession, but we need, if we do this, we have to have some sort of government agent, a ruling family to go in there and...
Yeah, well, like, we can't go back to seven kingdoms warring and seven different kings. Can't go back to that.
Right, but we need a peaceful overtaking.
Not peaceful, but like a... That's why I said smooth transition of power.
We need someone who's now going to control the peace. It had to be done this way. It needed to be done. But
once it's done, what are we doing then? And Robert doesn't strike me as the type that's thinking that far ahead.
If I'm king, I can have all the women I want.
I don't
want
to be king. Wait, if I am king.
Wow.
A couple of follow-up questions then. I would think that Hossa Tully and Jon Arryn are thinking this far ahead. They strike me, they're older men. We've talked about how wise a lord needs to be in order to rule. I would think that they talked this over with Robert. I would think that they helped him make this decision and probably did most of the deciding for him and just had to sell him on it. How big of a part do you think Ned played in this decision that Robert would make a claim to the Iron Throne? He's more concerned with Lyanna. Robert was concerned, and this is my other question, Robert was concerned with Lyanna. That was the reason he...
Lyanna now is just an excuse for his rage.
Doesn't seem like that's the focus of this anymore. No. Lyanna's no longer the focus. Now it's winning the Iron Throne. Revenge against the Targaryens is what's driving Robert. You know, he doesn't know if Lyanna's alive or dead. He's got no idea, but it doesn't seem like he's making a claim to the Iron Throne. It doesn't seem like Lyanna's really as much a concern as he says she is. If Lyanna was a concern, I don't think the plan would be, Robert, you make a claim to the Iron Throne. I think the plan would be, keep Viserys alive or something, and we'll rule him by committee. We'll keep tabs on him. For now, my main concern is we need to find Lyanna.
The, Rob and his, the motive change.
A lot like that.
First, it started out, we have to get my father back. Then it's revenge for my father. And then it's...
Revenge against the Lannisters, and it's... What was their end goal?
Motive changes. And see, like, Robert, the motive changes. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, start out for the love of my betrothed, to now, like, now we got to take over this king. Now we got to take over the kingship.
The justified reasons that these men start a war or go to war, it's never the end result. Because you can't go to war for love. You can't do that. You can't go to war for one woman, because the ramifications of winning or losing that war are not worth one person, no matter how much you love her, or how much you, in Robert's case, no matter how much you say you love her. John Arryn had the right idea. He raised his banners because he knew that this had to end. He wasn't going to give up Robert and Ned's head, so he knew that Daenerys would have to be removed from the Iron Throne. I'm sure he had been thinking ahead the whole time. And once Rhaegar returns, and we'll get to him in a second, but once Rhaegar returns to the Crownlands and returns to King's Landing and enters the field, it's obvious that they're not going to be able to work with him. It's going to have to be all the Targaryens are removed from King's Landing.
At this point, there's no turning back.
And there's going to be no peace with the Targaryens. And maybe they held on to the possibility of peace while Rhaegar was absent, while he was missing. But once he enters the field and once he's made it clear that he's staying loyal to his father, which he should, because it's his father. But once that's clear, Jon Arryn, Hoster Tully realize they're going to have to go all the way with this, and there's going to be no suing for peace. Robert's also been winning a lot of victories. He's not just a face for this war.
Right.
He's a accomplished soldier and a commander, and he will lead the rebel forces of Arryn, Baratheon, Stark, and Tully. These are all great houses, and they have a lot of smaller noble houses sworn to them, but it's not as many as you would think, because while all of the North is with them, we know that the North stays with the North, they stay with the Starks no matter what. All the North is there. Nearly all of the Vale are there. A few Vale houses stayed loyal to Targaryens. We talked about House Grafton. Mm-hmm. A few others stayed loyal to the Targaryens. But when we talk about the Tullys and the Baratheons, the Riverlands and the Stormlands, is not nearly as many. If you think about it, it makes sense. The majority of the Riverlands sided with Robert and the Tullys. Houses Dary, Mooton, and Rhaegar all stayed with the Targaryens, but they also had personal ties to the Targaryens. House Frey, which is the largest house sworn to the Tullys, were just slow to gather themselves together and get things going. Yeah, real slow. But the Stormlands, which you would think would be all in because their Lord Paramount is trying to win the Iron Throne, not nearly all of them are there. Less than half. Because the Battle at Ashford kept a lot of these houses in the south, and the siege at Storm's End is also keeping them out of this battle.
Guys, I want some thanks. This was great strategy.
He's like chilling out in a really big pavilion tent, like drinking wine every night, talking with packs of red wine about bullshit. So Robert's leading these forces south, making his way to King's Landing for a final battle. They don't make it all the way to King's Landing. The Targaryens. Rhaegar returns to the Crownland. When he gets there, he convinces Aerys to ask his former hand to the king, his former best friend, Tywin Lannister, for help. Aerys agrees to do that, but he doesn't really ask for help. He commands Tywin to bring his forces either to King's Landing or to meet with Rhaegar's forces to help destroy the rebellion.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Does not look right to me. They were there at the wedding at River Run, right?
Except at River Run, yeah.
Okay. Here's the Green Fork of the Trident. Where did they go after River Run? Why were they going north? Am I?
Question. No, you're right. Because the Green Fork is the Ruby Ford. But they were down. They have to be like right here, so how the fuck did they get there?
But why would they go there unless they just had something to do that they want? The Vale of Arryn was going to be their meetup.
Well, John Arryn was already there. He got married. He had to be there with the Vale forces. I don't think they're meeting up with anybody else. The only thing I can say, all right, so the issue is that River Run is pretty much in the Westerlands, almost. And the Tumblestone River is north. Red Fork of the Trident is to the south. The Tumblestone actually forks off from the Red Fork of the Trident. The Trident is three rivers. Green Fork to the north, Blue Fork in the center, Red Fork to the south. Where the Battle of the Trident takes place, the Ruby Ford, which is on the Green Fork,
This is the Ruby Ford here. It's north of Lord Haraway's town, and it's the only crossing of the Green Fork until you get to the Twins.
So they had this to meet up with the vet with John Aaron, and then they must have gone, why do this to meet up? Yeah, why didn't they go south?
The only thing I can think of is...
Was this too dangerous?
Yeah. They don't know what's going on with Casterly Rock. We'll talk about Tywin Lannister now. If they go further west, they're into the Westerlands. Nobody knows what side Tywin Lannister is going to take. But when it comes to Tywin Lannister, when it comes to the Westerlands, maybe the Reach is more powerful, but they're not as well commanded as the Westerlands. Nearly as wealthy, if not wealthier than the Reach. Almost as powerful as the Reach and better commanded than the Reach. Tywin Lannister is a man that can make a difference in this war for either side. Aerys has sent him a raven, commanding him to return to King's Landing and to help get rid of the rebellion. But they've also sent overtures to Tywin Lannister, asking him to join their side. And nobody's heard back from him. Tywin Lannister, sitting at Casterly Rock, as patient as Tywin Lannister is, and we know that he's a very patient man, and considering which way leads to glory for House Lannister. But if they haven't heard back from him, they must assume the worst. They must assume that Tywin Lannister is going to remain loyal to Aerys Targaryen. So if they go west, not only does it take them out of the way, but the ground is not as advantageous to them, but they don't know if they'd be walking into the trap. Or they don't know if maybe Tywin Lannister is going to be marching on Riverrun. If they go south, they have to cross the Red Fork, which they can do, but perhaps crossing the Red Fork is not as easy. The only thing I'm basing the Red Fork on is the Clash of Kings when Jaime has Riverrun under siege and the way he has to do it. If you guys are looking at a map of Westeros, it's probably the best way to listen to this, but if you look at a map of Westeros, you look at Riverrun, it's right at the fork where the Red Fork splits off to the Tumblestone and continues as the Red Fork into the Westerlands. From what I remember of A Clash of Kings, of Jaime having Riverrun under siege, he had to have literally three different sides. He had to have across the Red Fork, across the Tumblestone, and then right outside Riverrun by the River Road, right in this area here between the Tumblestone and the Red Fork. He had to split his forces into three in order to besiege Riverrun. I remember Lannister forces trying to cross Riverrun, and I think that was in Storm of Swords then, but they couldn't find a place to cross. I believe that it's difficult to cross this part of the Red Fork. So then if you think
about it. Did they go north and around?
Yeah, I would think that they planned to come this way because.
North and around.
Well, yeah, because then the question is, well, why don't they just cross here and come down this way? You want to get on the King's Road. If you don't cross here at the Red Fork, let's say, you know, right over here, there's a crossing, and I'm sure there is a crossing somewhere. So but then you got to get
come up here.
Isle of Faces, Blackwater. And they don't have a whole lot of sea power.
All right, that would explain. Yeah,
it's got to be the only reason. Maybe they cross the Blue Fork, but it makes the most sense that the Ruby Ford crossing into Lord Haraway's town.
Right.
The crossing here is possible. And at the crossroad, Lord Haraway's town, Salt Pans, where the Bay of Crabs turns into the Trident, it's easy to cross right there. But the waters are just too rough to cross here. Yeah, that's
the best way to explain it. By the time they got down there, they got cut off anyways as the Loyalist army was already there.
Right. The key thing is Tywin Lannister and them not knowing what Tywin Lannister was going to do. But the Targaryens are in the same boat because Tywin Lannister does not respond to Aerys' command. And maybe it's because Aerys sent him a command and sent him an apology. But I think the damage was already done to this point with Aerys and Tywin. Tywin was only going to help Aerys if it looked like Aerys was going to win. Or him joining would help Aerys win without him depleting his resources. Tywin was going to take advantage of the situation. So he was sitting back and just waiting for it to all unfold. And he does, as we see, he does play this perfectly. Rhaegar Targaryen takes control of the royal army. Jon Thordari, Barristan Selmy have already started to herd up the remains of Jon Connington's forces that lost at the Battle of the Bells. While this is going on, Aerys Targaryen reminds House Martell that Princess Ylia is in King's Landing and under the quote-unquote, protection of Aerys Targaryen. In response, House Martell sends 10,000 Dornishmen up the King's Road to help with the Targaryen cause. Aerys dispatches Prince Luwyn Martell of the King's Guard to lead them. So
smart move, you would think.
It's not smart that he doesn't have many King's Guard around him, I don't think, but it's smart to put
Luwyn Martell.
If this is a guy who's not trusting anybody, who's so paranoid, King's Guard you have to trust them, right? Because they swore an oath. And Prince Lewin leading Dornishmen, that makes the most sense. It's a good decision by Aerys. A good decision way late in the game after a lot of bad decisions or non-decisions.
I was just going to say her undecision.
With Prince Lewin going to meet with the 10,000 Dornishmen, Jon Dondarry, Varys, and Selmy out in the field gathering up John Connington's forces. Gerald Hightower, Arthur Dayne, Oswald went at the Tower of Joy. Not quite a plot hole, but why doesn't Aerys ask him where the fuck these three guys are?
Yeah, Rhaegar,
I send you three Kingsguard?
Oh, yeah. I sent you two. I sent your friend Arthur Dayne, the best swordsman in the realm. I can use him right about now.
It's one of those things where we can come up with a reason on our own. Fine. Again, it's hard to grasp that concept, especially if you're making the Kingsguard, this Kingsguard in particular, as important as they are. You would think Aerys would wonder where they are.
Demand them to come back. I want them back.
Sword of the Morning. Yeah, tell them to come back. And tell them to bring the forces of House Dayne.
Yeah.
How about that? And Hightower, again, forces of Old Town and the forces of Starfall also. So the only Kingsguard who's around Aerys is the newest member of the Kingsguard, Sir Jaime Lannister. And this is a good decision because he's unsure of what Tywin's going to do. As long as he has Jaime, he's got something to hold over Tywin should the worst case happen. So a couple good decisions, a couple bad decisions, a couple what the hell is he working on? And there we are. The 10,000 Dornishmen under the command of Prince Lewin Martell join Rhaegar's royal army en route to the Trident. Why are the rebels taking the route and crossing at what will be called the Ruby Ford? You could ask the same of the royalists. Why are they marching north to Ruby Ford? And I would guess for them, they're not going to cross the Blackwater Rush. They have advanced word that that's where Robert's leading his men. A little bit easier to come up with a reason why they take that route. But it's looking as though the Trident River, in particular, where the Green Fork breaks off north to the Twins and east to the Vale, south where the Blue Fork breaks off to Old Stones, out to Seaguard. This looks like it's going to be the line in the sand for both sides of this army. That's where they're all marching to. But meanwhile, Mace Tyrell packs the red wine.
Got this on lockdown. This is the best war ever.
They got Storm's End on lockdown, under siege. Nothing's going in, nothing's coming out. Mace Tyrell's
walking around like, I'm sure you have to have like a troop count, you know?
Right.
Any losses. He's going through heavy losses today. Oh, we just had one. That was because of sickness. I don't know if that doesn't count.
You got dragged off by a bear. We're going to count that.
This must be the least amount of fatalities in a war in the history of this realm right here.
He's got like one of those things like you see in factories. Like, yeah, this factory has had 0 days since an accident.
Every day he raises it all. This is what we're talking about. This is how House Tyrell Riddle Tarry's just there like, what are you doing here?
We should really march north. Don't you think we should march north, Mace? What are you, crazy? I got Stannis on lockdown. This is the key to the war right here.
Give up our defense?
Yeah. Look at this pavilion, this wine. We got the red wine.
Randall, they might name you Lord of Storms under this. You have a point.
We're going to war. Stay here. Chill out. They're almost successful in... Well, they're not. We know Stannis, and we know that he'll watch everyone he knows and loves starve to death before he gives up his castle. That's Stannis, and you got to respect that. I'm sure they think that they have him on the ropes because we know that Stannis and Renly and everybody that's inside of Storm's End is down to eating boiled leather. They've already eaten the rats. They got to the point where some of the men inside Storm's End are trying to communicate with the Tyrell host to give up Storm's End, and Stannis learns about that, so he's going to catapult them out to join the Tyrells, and the Maesters say... We might need to eat them later, so let's keep them around. That's where they're at. But Stannis is not going to give up Storm's End, no matter what.
I understand why Stannis is a little bit bitter towards Robert and maybe Robert's affection with Eddard.
Right.
But you think that maybe Stannis would be a little more grateful to Eddard, maybe just a little bit more?
Yeah, I always thought that also.
I mean, I understand, like, the jealousy. He's taking some of that on Eddard because of the Eddard and Robert's relation. But... Wouldn't you just be a little bit more of, you know, whatever? Thank you.
I would think so, too, and I did for a long time. And we'll get to this when we get to the aftermath. But basically, I think Stannis looks at Eddard at that point in time. Robert didn't come to lift the siege. Eddard came to lift the siege. under Robert's orders, he almost looks at Ned as though he's Robert's lackey. Less of a brother figure and a friend, more of just a guy who does whatever Robert wants him to do. And now that Robert's king, it's conflicting emotions for Stannis. I think at this point in time, at the age he's at, I don't think he yearns for the relationship with Robert that Ned has. He was probably jealous at one point in time, but now he doesn't respect what Ned is doing for Robert because it's like being a lackey. Add that with all the accolades that Ned gets and Renly getting Storm's End and him getting the shit end of the stick. I think it's a combination of all those things. But you would think that Ned and Stannis would actually get along really well. Like, really well. If Stannis was the firstborn and they both were fostered in the Vale, the realm would have been better for it. I think Stannis would make a good king. I think he's too black and white, but if Ned was his hand, he would have done a better job. Robert is just too emotional. Stannis is too emotionless. I love the Baratheon brothers. Renly, not so much, but Stannis and Robert, I think, are great characters. That's what's going on at Storm's End. A side note, I was thinking about getting into it. I don't really want to, but Stannis and company at Storm's End could very well have starved to death, if not for the heroics of a certain smuggler, Davos of Fleabottom, who is able to smuggle in onions and some other...
Potatoes, I think.
Potatoes, yeah, just some fruits and veggies. He smuggles it into Storm's End and really saves everyone at the castle, saves everyone there at the keep, and is the difference between Storm's End falling to the Tyrells and Stannis able to get through this siege. That story's been told so many times on Game of Thrones. We won't really need to go into it. So before the battle, the only other thing I want to talk about is the wildfire plot. Basically, the details of it, it spans the moment that the Battle of the Bells ends and Aerys realizes that Robert is a threat until Aerys' demise. After the rebel victory at the Battle of the Bells, Aerys fears that Robert might win the Iron Throne. So the Mad King enlists several members of the Alchemist Guild in a plot to destroy the city if Robert's able to prevail. Jaime Lannister is the only Kingsguard member around when this was planned. All the rest were absent or with Rhaegar. Thousands of jars of wildfire were gathered and placed in key positions under King's Landing. Hundreds were placed under the Dragon Pit and the Great Sept of Baelor, under every one of the city's gates, and even under the Red Keep itself. The pyromancers did their work in secret, and they did not even trust their apprentices with the knowledge of this plan. The rest of House Targaryen were also unaware of what he was doing. Queen Rhaella was, at this point in time, basically ignoring whatever her husband did. Rhaegar was busy marshaling together his army. The Hand to the King, Lord Carlton Chelsted, did grow suspicious of the constant comings and goings of the pyromancers from the Red Keep. He discovers the plot later on. I'm not going to be able to find exactly where in the timeline this happens, but he confronts Aerys about the plot. He tries to reason with him. He tries to jest with him. He begs him to not do this, and finally he threatens him, and then he resigns his position, flinging his chain of office at Aerys' feet. Bad move. Aerys burns him alive. Then he makes Rossart, his new hand of the king. Rossart is a pyromancer.
It's like probably the first person he saw in the room, like, nah, you. It's like in the office when Michael had the fire so on, and Jim's like, yeah, he's just going to fire the first person he sees.
You should fire... Anthony, what's that guy's name? Anthony, whatever.
Oh, Anthony Gardner. Yeah.
What advice has Andy given you? Dwight may have won the battle, but I will win the bigger battle.
Michael, you have this hand with such a plume. Thank you, Andy.
And I would like to say, Michael,
shut up.
Kiss up. This is also where, once Aerys burns Carlton Chelsted alive, he goes and he rapes his, I don't know if we'll call it rape, I'm not going to go there, but takes his sister slash wife, has his way with her, bite marks, scratch marks, really beats the shit out of her during intercourse. But this has to be when Daenerys is conceived, I would think. We'll go back to the wildfire plot later. It will play a part in Aerys' demise,
which would be right around like 8 to 9 months, as George has said, after John's conception.
Then that will also be, you see here, well, she'd be younger than John and Rob, right?
Yeah.
But still, all born in the same year. So that's pretty much it. That's the lines for the Battle of the Trident. We're going to take a break there, and when we come back, we're going to go through the actual fighting.
The Princes That Were Promised.
is an action-packed production.
Powered by Pinecast.
Subscribe.
Princes That Were Promised.
Via iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store.
Send a raven on
Twitter at
Princes Promised. Bend the knee.
At facebook.com/
The Promised Princes. Read, enjoy, and learn from
our scholarly essays at
theprincesthatwerepromised.com.
Journey with us
to the Red Keep
at
thepromisedprinces.actionpackedpodcasts.com. Thank you for listening.
When you think about Robert's Rebellion, it's the Battle of the Trident that sits foremost in your mind. Rhaegar and Robert in battle. How many pieces of art have you seen of them meeting in battle? That moment, which does not happen live in A Song of Ice and Fire. When I say live, you don't read about that happening. It's preceding A Song of Ice and Fire, but it really is one of the images that stands out most in this series, even though it happened 16 years before the events of A Song of Ice and Fire. Robert and Rhaegar meeting on the Trident. You can look at it in a poetic way, them fighting over the woman they both love. You can look at it like that, but you know that Robert didn't really love her. He just wanted what he couldn't have. And Rhaegar had bigger plans to fight a fight, but to fight against whatever evil he knew was coming down the road that he felt he was part of the prophecy to fight against. He never, I'm sure, expected to be here on the Green Fork of the Trident fighting against his cousin. At least he didn't think that when he took Lyanna away to the Tower of Joy. There's no way he thought that. But here he is. And it's odd in the first place that with 40,000 men on the Royalist side, and we don't know exactly how many, but a very large amount of men on the Rebel side, the fact that they even found each other and were able to have singles combat, what are the chances of that? Is that something that should easily happen? I mean, if you're not swinging at people and you're not surrounded by enemies and you're able to see the battlefield, I'm sure you could pick out where certain commanders are. You know, Rhaegar's not going to be by himself. He's going to be surrounded by men protecting him. And as far as I know, Robert does challenge him, and that's why they come to blows. The story of this battle and it coming down to these two men, it's neater, tidier, and I don't want to use the word perfect, but any battle that happens in these five books,
maybe with the possible exception of someone going one-on-one with the Knight's King,
right,
you're not going to get a Luke versus Darth type of one-on-one.
It's as close as it gets. The battle took place at the crossing of the Trident that would be later known as the Ruby Ford. Rhaegar tries to cross the river. Robert, he has that booming voice, and he's commanding his men as Rhaegar tries to cross the river. The Dornishmen, under the command of Prince Lewin Martell, came up on Robert's left flank. Sir Lynn Corbray, who we spoke about, he was with the Loyalists. The Battle of Goldtown switched side to join the Rebels. His father is wounded. Lynn Corbray picks up Lady Forlorn, a Valyrian steel sword, his father's sword, and he saves the day. The 10,000 Dornishmen sneaking up on Robert's left flank. He leads a charge, breaks the Dornishmen. During that charge, Lynn Corbray kills the already injured Lewin Martell.
Like, it's so funny, you compare, like, you know, this Kingsguard to the Kingsguard see in the Robert Baratheon. It's like you feel, with the exception of, you know, Barristan, you feel like when they die, it's a sad moment. But like if Meryn Trent dies, yes.
Yeah.
You know, the Kettlebacks, yes. These guys, you know, you just feel like, oh man, it sucks. You know, you don't know much about Lewin Martell, you just know he was part of that Kingsguard, and it just feels like, oh man, wasn't right that he died.
Alright, so basically Lewin Martell was wounded before he came to blows with Lynn Corbray. He was mortally wounded. So he was a goner. He went out fighting Lin Corbray. Lin Corbray killed him with Lady Forlorn. It sucks for Luan Martell and House Martell. Perhaps this is the beginning of the end for the Royalists during this battle. But that breaks the Dornishmen and their charge up Robert's left flank. Sir Barristan Selmy killed several rebels. Lord Jason Malister slew 3 of Rhaegar Targaryen's bannermen. These are just facts, the things that we know about it. They're bits and pieces that we get throughout A Song of Ice and Fire, here and there. Never once does it go through the whole battle. Pick it up through stories people tell, memories people have, memories point of view characters have. Many great lords and knights lost their lives or made names for themselves in the fighting. But the battle was decided when Robert and Rhaegar met on horseback in the stream. It's fact that Rhaegar wounds Robert, and Robert was already wounded from Ashford and his journey north. Rhaegar wounds him again, and like you said, a few inches to the right or to the left, and he would have won. He would have killed Robert. But as luck would have it that day, the 7, the warrior, were with Robert, it seems. Robert eventually crushed Rhaegar's chest with the blow of his warhammer. The blow was so hard that the rubies on Rhaegar's army were shattered.
Armor.
On his army. The rubies on Rhaegar's armor were shattered, fell into the river, and that's what gives the ruby fort its name, Rhaegar's rubies. The royal army is now leaderless.
Barristan Selmy's injured now also, too.
Luan Martell's dead. Jonathor Dary is also...
died.
Yeah, he's dead. He dies here also. That's 3 Kingsguard, Crown Prince... Word gets around.
Men were going for Ruby, but Rhaegar droobies. As Rhaegar falls to his knees, he whispers a woman's name.
Right. Let's finish with facts, then we'll go with the conjecture. As word gets around that Rhaegar has fallen, the royal army breaks and flees back to King's Landing. Barristan Selmy was close to death when he was brought before Robert. Roose Bolton, the lord of
the Dreadfort,
he counsels Robert to kill Barristan Selmy. But Robert spares Barristan's life. Sends his own maesters to tend to Barristan's wounds. What do you think about that?
Probably the most honorable thing Robert Baratheon ever did.
Is it wise? We know what happens with Barristan Selmy afterwards. He serves Robert until Robert's death. We like Barristan Selmy. He's an honorable man. And no harm came of letting Barristan Selmy live.
You know what? Actually, it might be what? Robert could be thinking, he goes down south so we can talk to the king, forfeit the title or something. Maybe having the kings, maybe that's what he's trying to think. But Robert doesn't go down, and he sends Eddard Stark down to chase.
What do you think of this? Robert doesn't make the decision to kill Barristan Selmy or not. We know Robert is a forgiving guy, and we know that from the 3 armies in a single day and forgiving all the lords. He would have forgiven Barristan Selmy. You got to respect Barristan Selmy, but I think this is more of a foresight move, a la Jon Arryn / Hoster Tully. If you're going to win the Iron Throne, you want to keep as much of the regime as you can, within reason, for the smooth transition. You keep Barristan Selmy around, part of Arya's Kingsguard, one of the most famous knights in the realm, one of the 7 most famous knights in the realm. That wins you over. There's points in on your side, especially if you forgive him.
Kingsguard serves to life.
Right. And if you're gonna go murder Barristan Selmy to the battle, what does that say about you as a king?
Yeah.
Because right now, it's not just winning that we need to think about, it's the politics. We got to start thinking about that. I think that Robert Baratheon would have spared Barristan Selmy, but I do think it's Jon Arryn and Hoster Tully that have given him the game plan to spare everyone you can within reason. And it also serves to separate Robert's thought process when he is having a normal day and when his rage takes him. He wants to kill every Targaryen just for being a Targaryen, but he's going to forgive Barristan Selmy, who killed quite a few of his rebels.
Right.
Robert spares Barristan's life. Lord Wyman Manderly granted the Wolf's Den to Sir Bartimus as a reward for saving his life during the battle. I don't know who Sir Bartimus is. Both sons of Mors, Crowfood Umber, were killed at the Trident, and Lord Grandison died a year later from wounds sustained in the fighting. Lord Grandison was one of the lords of the 3 houses that Robert defeated at the Battle of whatever the fuck, where he defeated 3 armies in one day. So these are the facts about the Battle of the Trident. In the aftermath, the battle obviously was the most decisive in the war. Walder Frey
And House Frey arrives after the battle is over.
Guys.
I got here. What's going on? Who am I fighting?
I got some more knights. Get in there. Guys, get in there. They need some men.
Let's go, guys. Come on. We got to help them. Walder Frey arrives after the battle is over. Hoster Tully has since called him the late Lord Frey and questioned his loyalty. Let's leave the aftermath at that. We're going to do the aftermath the next episode because there's a lot to get into. And I want to touch on some conjecture that go alongside the facts of the Battle of the Trident. In A Clash of Kings, when Daenerys is in the House of the Undying, she has a lot of visions. But one of them is...
Rubies flew off the chest of a dying prince, and his last breath was murmured a woman's name.
They don't say the name of the prince. They don't say which name he muttered. Obviously, it's Rhaegar.
Right.
And this is one of the first... No, it's probably not one of the first, but it's really starting to build the case that Rhaegar was not the bad guy that Robert makes him out to be. You already get that in Robert and from Ned's point of view in A Game of Thrones, but now you're seeing these visions of the House of the Undying, which paints Rhaegar as muttering the woman's name as he dies. Definitely not his daughter, like your friend thinks it is.
Oh, yeah, that one. Joke. Yeah. I haven't seen her in a while.
Rhaella.
That was bad. That was...
Yeah, there's no thought whatsoever.
Right, how old is Rhaella? 3 years old? How is she even a woman?
She's not even a woman. It's a baby. Mutter the baby's name. Daenerys has another dream, not a vision, a dream. In the Storm of Swords, she dreams that she is Rhaegar at the Trident, and she flies atop a dragon and melts the ice-armored host of the Usurper with dragonfire. I don't think that means anything for the future. I think it's more of a metaphorical...
Yes. I did see someone come up with the ice armor is the White Walkers that she sees.
Right.
It's not the Usurper. This is not me saying this.
Mm-hmm.
They said the person she thought is Rhaegar and all the people flying by Rhaegar is actually Jon. That she's on top of Drogon.
Huh.
And Jon is out there at the Trident.
Huh.
I'm not sure, who's sticking Valyrian blonde hair with brown hair, but that's someone was saying.
It's interesting that Daenerys, having never seen the Trident, has a vision in the House of the Undying and has a dream about the Trident, what she thinks is the Trident, but just what the Trident means for her and for her legacy and for her forebears, for her brother, her family. The Trident is a crossing from south to north, fire to ice, but it's that crossing that Rhaegar, he wasn't able to cross. It cost him his life and therefore cost House Targaryen Westeros. Him failing to cross that and win that battle, that was it for House Targaryen, essentially. She has another line in, I think it's Storm of Swords, right before she takes Astapor. But she says to herself, it's time to cross the Trident. You get over to that side, that's a huge step. It's a victory. And it's one that Rhaegar, it was a victory he was unable to gain. I think it's in the World of Ice and Fire. Maester Yandel, the author of the Worlds of Ice and Fire. The battle screamed about Lord Robert and Prince Rhaegar both. And by the will of the gods, or by chance, or perhaps by design, they met amidst the shallows of the ford. The two knights fought valiantly upon their destriers, according to all accounts. For despite his crimes, Prince Rhaegar was no coward. Eddard tells Robert, "You avenged Lyanna at the Trident." Robert says, "That did not bring her back. The gods be damned, it was a hollow victory." There's so many pieces of art depicting this battle, and they're all awesome. A few that are better than others.
The one that you see through, like, Rhaegar's shield, looking up towards Rhaegar's, the one when they're both on horseback.
The superhero level that both characters take with their armor and their reasons for fighting, it's poetic. It's cross-section of what A Song of Ice and Fire is about. Two men fighting for something neither one of them thought they would be fighting for reasons that hurt the realm more than helps the realm, based on miscommunication, based on their lineage, their blood, bringing them to this point and the ramifications that this battle has on the realm being felt for many years afterwards.
The wrong man won.
Yes and no. If Rhaegar wins, if Rhaegar kills Robert, let's look at it this way. Rhaegar falls in battle. The royal army breaks and flees back to King's Landing. If Robert falls in battle, what happens? Ned is there. John Arryn's there. Hoster Tully's there. The rebels have a reason to fight. If they give up, if they break and flee, they're not going to be forgiven by Aerys. Unless Rhaegar can...
I tend to think you would. Someone call me, you know, like, you know, a yuppie. I think Rhaegar would go to bat for Eddard and say, listen, I'm loving the sister. I think he'd go to bat. I don't know what I can say, but I think he would go to bat for him. Even at that point, though, I mean, you want to talk about Robert's street cred. If Rhaegar would have won, the whole entire realm would be like, yes, this is our true prince. This is, you know, they would probably all be, is it out of the realm to say that they're... If he goes back to King's Landing with Tywin's host, that they overtake Aerys and just name Rhaegar the king.
Well, that's the thing. It seems like that's what he was planning, and that's why he was able to convince Gerald Hightower to stick around with his heir. Whatever the result of the Trident was, the plan for Rhaegar was to remove his father from the Iron Throne because he was doing more harm than good, and I think the death of the Starks, Rickard and Brandon, was the nail in the coffin for Aerys' reign. When he did that, and then when he wrote demanding the head of Robert and Ned, Rhaegar knew that this man can no longer rule the Seven Kingdoms. He was not protector of the realm any longer.
We need Kit Harington on HBO. New series, the Italian post-Sopranos. Give me Harington.
He's got to be real careful about his next project.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about the next
project. And I guarantee he's going to be like, this is it. Thrones is over. Yeah. Oh, I hope he doesn't do anything stupid.
Harrison Ford does Indiana Jones. And Mark Hamill does Time Cop. I don't even know any of the movies he's in. Speaking of which, we're going to have to do a Last Jedi episode at some point. And prepare for things.
We got time. We do.
You might be right. If Robert falls in this battle, probably better off for the realm. As a whole.
I don't think Rhaegar would want to kill Eddard.
He doesn't want any more war because he's, like I said at the preamble, he has the bigger picture in mind. Saving Westeros. Saving humanity on Westeros. Prince that was promised. Azor Ahai. His prophecy and the reason behind it. That's what he believes in and has his whole life. He doesn't want more war. He knows there will be more war, but he doesn't want the realm fighting with itself when they have... When really the realm of men need to unite against death. Death is the true enemy. So you're right. But he doesn't win. And maybe he doesn't win because he's thinking about that. Maybe he assumes that he's going to win because... Well, at this point, he doesn't think he's the prince that was promised.
At this point, he's over that.
Maybe he assumes he's going to win. I think if he knew he was going to lose, he would have made different plans.
Dad, I'm not coming up.
That'll be it for this week. We'll be back next week with the aftermath of the Battle of the Trident and the final part of Robert's Rebellion. The sacking of King's Landing, Tywin Lannister finally entering the fray and choosing a side. We have a lot more to talk about with this. It's one of the most important pieces of Westeros history, one of the most interesting. As always, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/thepromisedprinces. Tweet us at Princess Promise. You can read our writings and our more in-depth review at theprincesthatwerepromised.com. You can find us on Tumblr also, princesthatwerepromised.tumblr.com. Visit our RSS feed, thepromisedprinces.actionpackedpodcast.com. And please leave us a review. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from. Like our episodes. Give them a 5-star rating. Give us a review. It'll be tremendously helpful to our podcast and make it so more people are exposed to our feed. More people have the opportunity to listen to us. Thanks for listening. We'll speak with you guys next week.